The Tom Woods Show, episode 761.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I know I got a lot of shavers out there, so do as I do and check out Harry's. Sign up for one of their shave plans. They'll send you their free trial set for just three smackers for shipping, including a free gift when you use coupon code WOODS. Check them out at harrys.com. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here. I am back from the Contra Cruise, which was the single best event of the past 200 years. If you talk to people who went to this thing, they're going to say wonderful things about it. I am so thrilled and excited with how much fun everybody had. It was vastly better than Bob and I ever dreamed it would be. And wait till we get some video and testimonials to you. It was unbelievable how great it was. It was such a wonderful time for so many reasons. I want to thank everybody who came. We had a nice big crowd. We had people asking, what is the Contra Cruise? Because, of course, everybody's walking around with these T-shirts on. And we had the occasional straggler listening in on some of our Q&A sessions. So a lot of fun. Bob Murphy won third place in the ship-wide karaoke competition. So the entire ship, 3,000 passengers, Bob actually came in third place. And I think he was robbed, by the way. I think he should have been first or second. But anyway, tremendous time. If we were to do it again, I hope you can join us because you'll see what I mean. You'll say, my gosh, I can't believe I didn't come the first time. One casualty, unfortunately, of the cruise was the microphone that I used to record a lot of these episodes. It's my own fault. I'm an idiot. I packed it carelessly. By the time I got it back, it was not being recognized by either computer that I use. And USB microphones are actually not easy to find. You have to send away for them, basically. You might say, oh, I'll just go to Best Buy. But how many people are looking for a USB microphone? Not a whole lot. So they tend not to be in stock, or you have to order them at the store. I did find one about 30 miles from me, something like that. It took me about 45 minutes each way to grab a microphone for today, at least. So yesterday I could not put out an episode. I had no microphone. So I've got something to hold me over for a few days. I'm not totally sure how it sounds because I got to get rolling with the episodes here. I think it's okay. I'm going to have this as my spare. My real microphone is coming in the mail in a couple days. But anyway, so that's why I wasn't able to do an episode the other day. But I learned a lesson. Always have a spare for a situation like this. You can't tell when something like that's going to happen. It's a hard item to find. It takes a few days to come in the mail. So I'll have a spare. Well, today I thought I would talk about an article that I saw that really made me think. And I'm going to tell you that I don't have any clear answers to this. So if it sounds like I just wandered around some ideas and just thought out loud, that's exactly what I'm doing. Because on this, I want to come right out and admit I don't feel like I have all the answers. Sometimes I give the impression that I have all the answers. I don't. And in particular, in this area, I definitely don't have all the answers. I want to tell you, by the way, that this week is going to be the last debate episode, right? Because the last presidential debate is coming up this Wednesday night. So Thursday morning, we'll get you that debate episode with Lou Rockwell and me. So that will be episode 764. So please watch for that. Got some other fun things coming up also this week. But anyway, and another ebook, if you can believe that. I got another ebook coming out. I can't stop myself. What can I say? The article I'm talking about, though, today, I'm going to link, obviously, at tomwoods.com/761. It's called Why I Won't Be Voting, The Real Reason Libertarians Don't Matter, by Brittany Schaefer. And the gist of the article is this, that in the past, she had been, the author, had been a non-voter, and she decided when Ron Paul ran for office, ran for president, that she would in fact advocate voting and participating in the system because she thought that supporting Ron Paul could have real practical effects in the world that would be entirely benign. So any things having to do with the war on drugs, war itself, the federal government and its various agencies and curtailing or abolishing them. And it's true, just like her, I got some flack from libertarians as well, from some libertarians, for advocating voting for Ron Paul. If you can believe that, there were people who thought that by even voting for Ron Paul, you are consenting to the system and this and that, which always struck me as a leftist argument. We shouldn't be making that argument. It's the left that says that you're consenting to the system and you're making all kinds of ideological statements simply by voting, whereas I view myself as being placed in an impossible situation, and I'm going to use every means available to try to lift the burden on myself, even if those means are provided to me by my oppressors. Might as well use them. Better than not using them, is my view. If there's anything that can improve my material condition, why not try it? That's my view. That was Lysander Spooner's view also. So there are a lot of people on both sides of this question, but there's definitely a vocal minority of libertarians who are absolutely opposed to voting. So Brittany Schaefer said, I think you can vote for Ron Paul. But she's now evolved still further on the question, and she says that I've had a closer look at how the system works, and I believe I have a better understanding of why this system of electing representatives, especially at the federal level, can never be an effective way of achieving liberty. Now, she's saying that's not to say that a local ballot initiative couldn't do some good from time to time. Sure. And we've seen that in different the relaxation or repeal of various laws across the country. But these are entirely different from presidential elections. Then she said that someone unnamed in high up in a Republican political campaign had said that the reason there isn't more of a libertarian angle in the messages that you hear from Republican candidates is that libertarians don't vote, and that's why they don't matter. Libertarians don't vote, and that's why they don't matter. Well, that's why she wrote the article, was to argue that it may be true that libertarians don't matter, but it's not because they don't vote. And she says, think about what politicians who seek office care about. They care about votes, yes, but they also need money. They care about money, they care about campaign contributions, and they care about, as she says, maintaining the relationships with the people, the corporations, and the other institutions that will keep that money flowing to them. There's no law that can change this. And then she says, and this is the point of her article, the things libertarians want, freedom, less government interference in markets and in personal choices, non-interventionist foreign policy, there is no money in these things for politicians. There are no big corporations and very few rich people who are willing to pay tons of money to politicians to refrain from intervening in markets or to keep the troops home, etc. In fact, it's just the opposite. A lot of times, people of influence and institutions of influence want to use money to influence politics in the other direction, to expand the state for their own benefit. Now, let me read to you just verbatim a couple of her paragraphs. She says, understand that behind the empty campaign promises, politicians have essentially two things to offer to the people who support them. Power, in the form of regulatory and other control over competitors and others who may get in the way of a particular entity remaining comfortably profitable. Two, money. Not their own money, of course, your money and my money. Taken from us in taxes and in the continual devaluation of the government-issued money we all use. Politicians can give money to their supporters in the form of contracts for things like military equipment and public works projects, or in less direct ways, like mandating that government schools all stock epinephrine injectors that meet the same very specific product requirements that your device happens to meet. And the list goes on. What is not on this list is liberty. Why? Because nowhere in this game is there an advantage to selling liberty. This point was driven home to me a few years ago when I asked a California senator's policy consultant if his boss would consider relaxing business restrictions as a way to help parents of children with special needs create the services they need. He practically laughed at me. There was nothing in it for his boss or his boss's supporters in reducing the very control that he uses to buy support. All right, now let me pause and say a little something about this. I think there's a lot to what she's saying here, of course. Given the choices that politicians have in terms of what position to take, well, all things equal, assuming they have no rigid ideological commitments, and not a lot of politicians are known for that, But assuming they don't, and one path gives them power, resources, and influence, and another gives them none of these things and almost guarantees them obscurity, well, it's pretty obvious how on balance they're going to turn out, what path they're going to take, what choices they're going to make. So certainly that's right, that the incentives skew away from liberty. Yet at the same time, although I think that means that not a majority of politicians can be counted on to help us, I don't think that makes it inconceivable that there could at least be a minority of people. Now, I know there's great empirical evidence against this, given that there's been only one Ron Paul in well over 200 years of American politics. So I will grant you that the empirical evidence is quite overwhelming against what I'm suggesting is at least theoretically possible. But think of this. Think of all the libertarians you know who, for no pay whatsoever, nevertheless do things on behalf of the cause. Think about people who work in the Libertarian Party. Whatever you may say about Gary Johnson, it's a very thankless task to get petition signatures and to do all the daily grunge work associated with the Libertarian Party. You certainly don't make money doing it, but you do it because you believe in something. Or think about all the websites and blogs out there that are dedicated just to the spread of our ideas. And there are some of these are great, like there's, I don't know if it's still there, but the Lysander Spooner website was just keeping alive all the works of Lysander Spooner because the person thought the world needs to know about these things and be able to read them easily. You know, we've got, and of course we have the Mises Institute, for example, which is funded entirely by voluntary donations that makes available almost every classic of liberty anyone would ever want to read or listen to or watch. It's all there. All there. And made available to the public for nothing and supported entirely by donations. So in other words, we have a lot of people, because the ideas we believe in are so attractive, so compelling, who are willing to do an awful lot even though it's going to cost them, even though they're not going to earn anything, even though it's going to mean marginalization and obscurity. They do it because they believe in it. So I don't see why, if we see this phenomenon across all these different areas of society, why it's inconceivable that we could see it in politics too. Couldn't you have somebody who doesn't care about the accolades of politics? Couldn't you have somebody who just says, I want to do this because I believe in the ideas, the same way a big donor to the Mises Institute does that because he believes in the ideas? Or the same way people do pro bono speaking or pro bono work or give resources away or write and speak and volunteer because they believe in the cause. Why couldn't that also be done in the political realm? At least in principle, that's my point, at least in principle. In practice, maybe it won't work out that way, but in principle, it seems like at least it could. Now, there aren't that many examples. As I say, I can think of Ron Paul, but, you know, like, for example, Ron Paul had this thing where he was, I guess in the late 90s, there was some White House event for all the congressmen, and he showed up with Carol. And all the congressmen, Republican and Democrat alike, were getting their pictures taken with Bill Clinton. And Ron Paul had absolutely no interest in having his picture taken with Bill Clinton, even though he's the president. I mean, he was from the opposing party, but he could legitimately say, hey, he's the president. I'm going to get my picture taken with him. He refused. He just walked around the grounds and looked around with Carol, but he had absolutely no interest in getting that picture taken. That's why you've never seen a picture of Ron Paul with Bill Clinton. Not because he never had the opportunity, but because it didn't interest him. So it's, in a way, it calls to mind the recent news item about, for heaven's sake, Bob Dylan being awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature, and they can't seem to get him on the phone. They can't seem to reach him. He has not even acknowledged this. He was at a concert the other day where the Rolling Stones were also performing, and they congratulated him on the prize before he got on stage, and then he got on stage, didn't even acknowledge it. So they basically, the Nobel Committee has given up trying to reach him. So he's kind of like Ron Paul in that way. He's not interested in that stuff. So anyway, it's at least conceivable. And my concern is that, as I've said on the show before, if we're not in the political arena, then I'm afraid we don't get heard. Because a lot of people get their political ideas not from reading books about political theory, but they get them by reading the news around the time of an election. And if our ideas are not represented at least somewhere in there, then we don't get a hearing. And that's what worries me, that we're so concerned about being so principled. I don't think there is a principled, I personally don't think there's a principled case against voting. And in fact, Brittany in this article is not saying that that's her case. She's making a pragmatic case. She's saying that we don't play this kind of game. swapping favors and money and all that. We don't play that game, so there's no way we can win, so there's no point in playing. There's no point in trying. I see that, but I'm afraid that we're not ever going to penetrate people's minds if we're not in that arena. Now, she kind of anticipates my objection. Although, let me first continue to just summarize this concluding part of her argument. She says, in theory, politicians could offer liberty to their supporters. They could offer to cut back regulations, to end military aggression, but who's going to pay them for that? Again, these are things that would benefit everyone, all of society. But the game of politics is not about benefiting all of society, and the widely accepted belief that it is perhaps the most dangerous lie ever crafted. And she goes on, in order for a seeker of liberty to win at this game, that person would have to compete with the campaign donations and other inducements made by military contractors, major pharmaceutical companies, oil companies, but these are all entities that have been made rich by virtue of government interventions and direct largesse. How can a liberty seeker hope to offer the same level of financial inducements to politicians as these people when they are not also on the receiving end of the government slush? This is the real reason that libertarians don't matter in the political sphere. It's not because they don't vote. It's because they don't participate in the real game of politics, the interest-driven game that can never reward a player who wishes to dismantle the very engine of that game. People win at the game of politics by buying and selling political power over other people's lives and resources. A player who wants to reduce that power will not find themselves rewarded within that game. They will find themselves spat out of it. And the harm that's done, you may say, well, what harm can it do if I cast a vote? She says, here's the harm. You're perpetuating a lie that voting can be an effective way of advancing liberty. And in so doing, you're helping to direct people's energy and focus away from efforts that actually do have the potential to advance liberty. So she then points out examples of people who are advancing liberty, and here I'm drawn back into her argument. She talks about Dale Brown of the Detroit Threat Management Center. Remember, that was thought of as one of the best episodes of this show that I've ever done, so I'll try and remember to link to that. There are a number of other people mentioned. I mean, we can't all be Edward Snowden or Julian Assange, but they're examples of people who are doing something a little bit more important than voting. Or the 10th Amendment Center, which is not really focused on presidential politics. She's kind enough to mention me, which I appreciate, the Mises Institute as well, the Foundation for Economic Education. And then she says, every homeschooling mom and dad in the country. And that's an excellent point. Because obviously, if you can help a young person to be able to see the full picture of society, not the distorted one you get in school, but both sides of these important questions, that's vastly more important than any vote you'll ever cast. Vastly more important, and certainly more significant. Your vote is never going to make a difference. But who knows if that one person who has the opportunity to hear our ideas may make a difference. And for heaven's sake, I can't think of who it was, but I'm sure it's been more than one person, who has looked back on the millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars that have been blown over the years on presidential politics and politics, political donations in general, and then thought, what if we took that money and we used it to create a full-blown, whether it's homeschool curriculum or academy or some kind of free online education or whatever, something that would benefit, that could benefit tens of millions of people and get our ideas out there alongside the boring, predictable mainstream ideas about history, economics, and all down the line of disciplines. That would have made a vastly bigger difference in the world if we had spent even a quarter of that money on a project like that. There are all kinds of projects that if we funded them with even 10% of the money that's spent on presidential politics, we would make a noticeable and clear difference in American history. It would be a watershed moment. And so as I think that through, I think to myself, well, maybe she is right after all. Maybe this is a big waste of time. When you compare the money that's been spent on it to what it might have been spent on otherwise, Think of all the different ways you think we could advance liberty if only we had the resources. Well, in a way, we would have the resources if we'd been keeping our eye on the ball and not getting distracted by politics. So as you can see, I'm of two minds on this, and I'm not sure I can resolve this here right now, but I wanted to think it through, to talk it through a little bit here. So I'm glad she raised these issues in my mind. I'm just going to have to continue thinking about them. You should check out the article at tomwoods.com/761. I want to share another thing with you. This one, totally ridiculous. But first, let me thank our friends at Harry's, who have once again helped out the show. I was just reading in my private Facebook group, somebody wrote, "So we bought the Harry's shave sets for myself and my two teenage sons through the Tom Woods discount. Truly the best shave I've ever had." This is right from my private Facebook group. "Truly the best shave I've ever had. Plus the show discount saved us more than 25 smackers. Thanks." Well, his thing says $25, but I like to convert that to smackers. There's a one-to-one exchange ratio between them. Harry's has basically got me back into shaving with a blade. I used to shave always with electric, but I've started shaving with a blade again because we all know it's better. Just that in the past, I would shave with a blade and just look horrible. I was just bleeding everywhere, and it was just a total mess and embarrassing and awful. But I'm getting just like this guy, I won't mention his name, I didn't ask him, but just like this member of my supporters group, I'm getting the best shave I've ever had. And it's a nice feeling, and it's smooth and wonderful and clean, all great. Well, they've got a special deal. They're giving away a free trial set when you sign up for one of their shave plans. That set includes a razor, a 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. And plus, if you use code WOODS at checkout, they'll throw in a post-shave balm, which feels very nice, by the way. They'll throw that in for free as well. All you got to do is pay 3 smackers for shipping, and you get all those goodies. How do you do that? Check out harrys.com. It's harrys.com. And use coupon code WOODS, and you are off to the races, and you can be just like me in a shave sense. All right, what have I got here? I think I'm probably going to send this out as an email with a little additional commentary, so do open it when it arrives. But I just saw this. This is an article from a professional journal, an academic journal. And, you know, these are the journals that you're supposed to write for if you want to get tenure, if you want to be taken seriously, if you, you want to have your work subject to peer review. You have an article published in a scholarly journal. This journal is called Geohumanities. And the article is by two professors, Lisa Jordan Powell and Elizabeth S. D. Engelhart. And the article, this is from Volume 1, Issue 2, 2015, is called, I'm not kidding. The article is called "The Perilous Whiteness of Pumpkins." Now, I want to read to you the abstract. And as I'm reading this to you, I want you to think, if you were going to write an abstract of a paper that was as ludicrous as you could make it, and that was as much of a parody as you could possibly be of this kind of person and that kind of article title, could you improve on this? So, here we go. This article examines the symbolic whiteness associated with pumpkins in the contemporary United States. Starbucks Pumpkin Spice Latte, a widely circulated essay in McSweeney's on decorative gourd season, pumpkins in aspirational lifestyle magazines, and the reality television show Punkin' Chunkin' provide entry points into whiteness-pumpkin connections. Such analysis illuminates how class, gender, place, and especially race are employed in popular media and marketing of food and flavor. It suggests complicated interplay among food, leisure, labor, nostalgia, and race. Pumpkins in popular culture also reveal contemporary racial and class coding of rural versus urban places. Accumulation of critical, relational, and contextual analyses, including things seemingly as innocuous as pumpkins, points the way to a food studies of humanities and geography. When considered vis-a-vis violence and activism that incorporated pumpkins, these analyses point toward the perils of equating pumpkins and whiteness. I haven't got the slightest idea what that is supposed to mean, but that is the actual abstract of an actual scholarly article. One of the two authors is John Shelton Reed, Distinguished Professor of Southern Studies in the Department of American Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So in case you think I'm cheating by picking somebody from Podunk University, I am not. So when you think about people who say, we need more money in higher education, we need to make it free or whatever, you're subsidizing that. That's what these people are doing all day. A whole bunch of them are doing that. Craziness like that. And when you see people out there like that woman, was it the University of Missouri, the one who was trying to keep journalists out of the safe space some months ago, and she was saying, I need some muscle around here to get the journalists out, and they finally, I think her name, what was her name? Click? Professor Click? Something like that. Anyway, when you look at her resume, her CV, all her publications are like this. They're all ridiculous. They're about nothing. They show no learning at all. All these people, the ones who cause the most problems for regular people who just want to study, are always the ones who are being subsidized to write nothing. Nothing about nothingness. So I think I will link. Why not, right? Why not link to, yeah, I got a show notes page, right? Why not use it? I'll link to the perilous whiteness of pumpkins at tomwoods.com/761, and you check out the perilous whiteness of pumpkins for yourself. See what you think about it. All right, before I let you go, let's see. Let's talk about a new podcast that is up and running, the Culture and Anarchy podcast. And this is written by somebody who studied and knows an awful lot about literary theory. So you can find it at culture-anarchy.com. And it's the sort of site, it looks to me like a place where you'd get revenge on your crazy professors who taught you literature in college and taught you all this crazy postmodernist nonsense. Well, the creator of this site is getting his revenge, and it is sweet and wonderful. So I strongly recommend, I mean, it really is like the whiteness of pumpkins kind of stuff. And he's got a whole blog where he's going to talk about this kind of craziness that people in literary studies are obsessed with. So the site is culture-anarchy.com, and the podcast is the Culture and Anarchy podcast. So check that baby out. I'm going to link to it as the listener website mentioned at tomwoods.com/761. And remember, start your blog or website through my special link. You get this mention, you get a backlink on my site, which is very useful for your search engine optimization. You get 24 video tutorials plus membership in my private bloggers group, where you will get a lot of your questions answered, and we have a good community there. So the place to go for all these goodies is tomwoods.com/publicity. All right, tomorrow it looks like I'll be doing another episode on my own. Then after that, it'll be an episode with Lou Rockwell, and I've got several other goodies coming up. I got an episode with a professional poker player whom I got to know on the Contra Cruise, who's been playing professionally for 25 years at least, and he took me through a very educational stroll through the cruise ship casino, and he knows all about libertarianism and gambling in the state, and just, you know, of course I can ask him poker questions too, so that's going to be fun. I'm going to try and get that in by the end of the week. So got some goodies plus another bonus episode coming at you this weekend. So we're back up and running. Sorry for the delay. I will never, ever be without a spare microphone again. Thanks for listening. Check out tomwoods.com/761.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.